until 6, this is Drive with Adam Shands.
It's 6 minutes past 4. Thanks for your company this afternoon. We're learning more about the final moments of Air Asia flight QZ8501, which crashed into the ocean on December 28 on a flight from Indonesia's Surabaya to Singapore with a loss of 162 souls. We're now told that from the black box recorders, there's a recording of the noise of several alarms, including one that indicated the plane was stalling. We've also been told that the plane had climbed abnormally fast before it stalled and plunged into the sea. I'm joined by Desmond Ross, who's a former commercial pilot and an aviation security expert, with his view on what this information tells us. G'day, Des.
Hey, again.
Yeah, good. What do you think this new information tells us about the final moments of that flight?
Well, first of all, I think something's lost in the translation a little bit, which is not surprising. There's been a lot of translational errors in this whole thing right from the beginning. But the aircraft wasn't going too fast. That's not an issue. What can happen, and it's a little bit difficult to explain to someone who's not an aviator, but the aircraft itself was probably being picked up by a mass of air that was going up a great updraft, and it was being forced up. But the relative speed of the aircraft to that mass of air would not have necessarily been abnormal at all. The aircraft flies in a bubble of air, the air that's surrounding it, and its airspeed and its rate of climb or descent is relative to the air that it's in. So in this case, the fact that it had a sudden updraft and it was going up at a rapid rate, yes, 6,000 feet is much higher than normal, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the aircraft, relative to that air mass, was doing anything unusual. So there's still a lot of questions to be answered, mate, and, you know, the icing one is one that comes up all the time. They're saying that maybe the aircraft suffered icing and lost lift. That's possible.
Let's try to boil that down a bit. They're flying into a cumulonimbus cloud, are they not?
Yeah, well, apparently, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm told by another mate of mine who's a pilot that basically if you fly into that sort of weather, you die. Simple as that.
Yeah, you expect trouble. That's my entire point right from the beginning of this thing. What were they doing in there? What were they doing in that sort of weather? They have weather radar on the aircraft. The air traffic controllers know what the weather is. They should have been issued with a weather report before departure, but what we're being told now is that the pilot was a last-minute replacement for somebody else, and he didn't have a weather report when he took off. That is a big failing of the company, if that's correct.
And he should be getting on his radar, he should be getting red warnings that he's flying into a storm, which I'm told if you fly into one of these clouds, it's like flying into 10 to 100 atomic bombs.
Well, but there's two things that you avoid when you're flying. One is a mountain and the other is a cumulonimbus cloud. They both can be equally devastating. You don't fly into a mountain any more than you fly into into that sort of weather. You avoid it. And, okay, give the guy his due. What we understand is that he was asking for a clearance to climb over the cloud. Now, that's actually not necessarily the right thing to do because those clouds can go up at a very fast rate. And if this 6,000-foot-a-minute climb rate is anything to go by, that one was going up very fast.
So he's flying upwards, if that's what happened. He's flying upwards at this, trying to get over this enormous thunderhead, and basically he's flown into what I believe is called Coffin Corner. Can you explain what that is?
that's not easy to describe either without a whiteboard, but the bottom line is that the higher you go, the lower is the band of airspeed in which you can operate. When you're taking off, you get off the ground at about 120, 130 knots or something, and you accelerate up to your normal flight speed. At ground level, that's maybe 450 knots, something like that. But when you're up at that altitude, the aircraft will have a slow speed stall at a certain speed, and it can also enter a high speed stall where the wings actually can go supersonic because the speed of sound varies at altitude. So you can get into a high speed stall up there. And it means that the aircraft may only be able to operate in a little band of airspeed. It might only be a 50-knot or 100-knot band of airspeed in which it can safely operate. And normally that's fine. Normally that's not a problem. The computer systems, the flight management system controls all of that. But something could have gone wrong where they got into, as you described it, Coffin Corner, which essentially is an area where the aircraft is not able to do what it's designed to do. The wings aren't functioning properly and nothing is working properly, and you end up in possibly a high-speed stall going down, or a slow-speed stall going down with your nose up.
Sure, it's a horrifying moment. An email from my pilot friend just sort of describes the moment where your nose is pointing up, you're covered in ice, you're blinded by lightning, one wing in an updraft, the other in a downdraft, the nose smacks up like it's hit by a wall. The airplane stalls. You know, the only way to get the nose down now is by the rear stabilizer, but it's flimsy. It's got blocks of ice going through it like bullets. There's no more lift. It's no longer a wing. And a stalled plane is like a 65-ton piano falling out of the Empire State Building, 3 tons of ice accumulating a minute. It sounds like a desperate, desperate situation that could have been avoided.
And it is, and this is the entire point. I mean, what we have to... We come back to your original question, why was he there? And my question all along has been, why did he get into that situation? Why was the aircraft in jeopardy? The reality is that it shouldn't have been. It should have turned around. Now, waiting for an air traffic controller to give you clearance to climb or to divert or whatever is rubbish. You don't do that. If the aircraft is in trouble, if you're in trouble, if you, as the captain of the aircraft, estimate that you've got a huge problem, you turn around and you get out of it and you tell air traffic control about it afterwards. Your first responsibility is the safety of the aircraft and the passengers.
Indeed.
But he had a final option, which he obviously didn't take, or he left it too long and he couldn't take it, and that was to do a 180-degree turn and fly back and land at Surabaya, where things were fine.
And he thought it's a tragic thing, and I don't want to criticise the dead here, but maybe, you know, that sort of macho attitude, I can fly over this or I can deal with this, sealed his fate plus the lives of 162 people.
It unfortunately could well be the case. Look, I did some accident investigations in India. I don't mind saying it was India, not Indonesia. And that was in 2010, and we found 4 accidents that were caused by ex-military pilots determined to complete their mission. They were still in that mental attitude of a military pilot, determined with a military imperative to get to the destination, to drop their bombs or to deliver their special forces troops. Now, that's fine. These guys are wonderful pilots. They're great pilots, probably the best trained pilots in the world, but that sort of attitude does not fit in the civil aviation world. In the civil
it
aviation
certainly
world,
doesn't.
You have a
it
different
certainly doesn't.
Imperative, and that imperative is to land all your passengers alive.
That's right. Is there a case now for adding to the systems on the aircraft an override, if you like, on the autopilot, which will actually take the plane around these cumulonimbus formations, these storm clouds, if pilots are foolhardy enough to try to fly through them or over them?
Look, you're getting into something there that's a bit more than just what you're referring to. There's been big issues about pilots relying upon the automated systems of aircraft. These modern aircraft, the Airbus in particular, and the latest Boeings and so forth, they're so automated that there is now genuine criticism and genuine concern arising that pilots are losing their basic skills of being able to fly. It's little more than operating video games. It's not much different, should I say, than operating video games, because the pilots are not connected to the airplanes. They're connected to a series of computers which fly the aircraft according to the commands that the pilot enters through his control stick and his flight management system. This is fine while everything's going well. But if you take, for example, Qantas 32 out of Singapore last year when they lost an engine and so forth, and that was a classic circumstance where there was so much damage caused by that exploding engine. It cut through cables, it cut through hydraulic lines, it cut through all sorts of things in the wing and in the fuselage, that the computers were no longer functioning. The computers were flicking up all sorts of data and information that was totally useless to the pilots. And at the end of the day, the captain and the crew on that aircraft went back to their basic flying skills to get that aircraft safely on the ground. The worry is that a lot of the younger pilots that are now coming along and being trained don't have those basic flying skills because they're not taught anymore.
Sure.
I was taught how to do aerobatics and how to stall an aircraft and spin an aircraft and recover from all that sort of stuff, as were people like those guys. But that's not being done any longer.
Right. We're almost out of time, Des. I've just got on another matter. Virgin Australia has removed the fuel surcharge on its flights to the U.S., thereby reducing fares on the Trans-Pacific route. Qantas haven't done so yet, nor Emirates. Are they having a lend of us? You know, fuel prices have dropped significantly. Why haven't all the airlines taken it off yet?
Well, of course, they should be doing that. Emirates might be a slightly different case in point because it's widely thought in the industry that they get a super deal on fuel because they operate out of the UAE, and the UAE's fuel is a lot cheaper. If you're driving a car up there, I think you'll find you only pay about 40 cents a litre, even in the bad times, because they have so much oil. But the Virgin move is a very good one, and I think it's an honest one, given the lower cost of fuel these days, and it looks like that lower cost is going to remain for the next 2 or 3 years, according to things I've read recently in the Financial Review. So I think that Qantas should, and hopefully, fingers crossed, they will be reducing that fuel charge or removing it altogether very soon.
Well,
I would expect them to.
Given the competition we have in this country in aviation, you would expect they would. Thanks for your time, Des.
No worries, mate.
Yeah. That was Des Ross, a former commercial pilot and aviation expert, a security expert. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. Of course, if the fuel price is dropping, the surcharge has got to come off. So I'm sure you'd agree. If you don't, or you know, either way, give me a call on 922-11882. Coming up, we'll talk about cyclists and their bells.
After the minute 6...